There's hunger is the fire I breathe. Love is a banquet on which we feed.
Patti Smith is going to be with us in just a moment. Patti has made such a significant contribution to the music scene and the world of poetry, and now the world of memoirs. She is a beautiful writer, and her book, Just Kids, has been published. It's about her relationship with Robert Mapplethorpe, how she evolved as a poet and as a performer, and how he moved into his very provocative style as a photographer. It's about their love. It's about what was going on in New York and in the country, really, in the 1960s. It's how she found a rock and roll band and found the voice of punk rock. And it's really a lovely book. So she's going to be with us in just a few moments, and we'll play some of her important music. She also made a significant contribution as a critic, as a rock and roll critic for Rolling Stone and other publications. Patti Smith joining us in just a moment. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is our Winter Pledge Drive, and Lisa Nalbandian is with me. I do want to tell you that we just did so well. It is so heartening to have somebody on the air like Jim Wallace, who wrote a book about values, who's been at this working on poverty issues for 35, 36 more years, and to get all of those calls last hour. That just makes my day. I feel good. We went way over our goal of 25 calls. We had 65 calls last hour, and that's a good thing. So thank you, everybody, for your calls and for your concern about this old world. Lisa Nalbandian joining me here in our studios in Milwaukee, and we're here to raise money that we need to pay for the programs that keep you in the know and entertained. You're not going to be disappointed by the interview with Patti Smith, which is coming up in a moment. The people who help pay for our programming are the people who use it. That's how we work. So please go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552 to ensure the future of the programming that you count on. WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Hi again, Lisa.
Hi, Kathleen. And my gosh, thank you so much for such a great hour last hour. But it's a brand new hour, and now we have to reach 75 pledges by 11 o'clock. And very simply, meeting this goal ensures that Wisconsin Public Radio has the money that we need to fund informative programs in the month to come. Give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 and help us meet this goal.
In just a minute, we'll be speaking with Patti Smith, and you'll have a chance to speak with Patti as well. It's hard to say exactly what we talk about. We talk about poetry. We talk about Robert Mapplethorpe. We talk about fashion. We talk about Sam Shepard. We talk about necklaces and parents and children and getting pregnant at a very early age and AIDS and dying. And, oh, my gosh, that's what the book is about. It's about everything, and it's so well done. Patti will join us momentarily. We have these conversations because of your support. We ask you to go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thank you for doing that.
No kidding. Giving at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 is easy. All it takes is a gift of a dollar or two a week and a few minutes of your time. Now, keep in mind, a dollar or two a week adds up to about $50 to $100 for the year. And all year long, you'll benefit from this program and all of the WPR programs you love. Make your contribution at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 and give as generously as you can.
WPR is a lot of things. It's a great source of news. The news on the hour from National Public Radio is not to be surpassed. Great international coverage. It also is a source of entertainment, music, discussion. It helps you get through sometimes some rough times, you know. I leave this on for, I know I'm too attached to dogs, but, and whoever sent me this great dog, oh my gosh, you made me cry this morning. But my dog listens too. I don't have him listen to me because I think he might get a little bit upset during the day. But he does listen, you know, to public radio. And does he pledge? Does he ask me? Does the dog pledge? I'll ask this afternoon. It's not too late. But for us, you know, this is my last day asking for your support for this program. So for your pledge, and I'll talk to Murphy this afternoon of whatever you can give, we're very happy to take it. Actually, about $120. You can feed 40 people if you ask for that, which is a great thing to do. It's a good part of this pledge drive. How do people pledge, Lisa?
Well, it's pretty simple, Kathleen. You go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. A goal of 75 pledges this hour, and we already have two.
All
73
right.
More to go.
We are on our way. Thank you very much, Lisa. We'll talk to you later. Patti Smith is with us this hour, and she's just taken me into a whole new world. I really enjoyed reading about her life. Her book is Just Kids. Patti Smith, many of you are very, very familiar with her. She is a writer, a performer, a visual artist. She is a rock and roll critic. She gained really instant recognition back in the 1970s for her emergence of poetry and rock. Her album Horses, that has a picture on the front that Robert Mapplethorpe took. It's a wonderful photograph. And that album has been hailed as one of the top 100 albums of all time. She has recorded 12 albums. She has been considered as one of the top 100 performers of all time as well. This book is an incredibly tender, moving account of her relationship with Robert Mapplethorpe. When they were in New York, they were poor, they were poetic, they were artistic, they thought they might be, he particularly, be famous at some point, but they were so poor that when they went to visit museums, only one could had the admission. They had admission for one, so one person could go into the museum, and then the other would wait outside and hear what the other had to say about the exhibit. Isn't that just a lovely story? There are ups and downs in this. Robert Mapplethorpe struggling with who he was as a human being. Thought at one point that he might be gay. Patti didn't know very much about what that really meant, and he ultimately died of AIDS, very sadly. But this book is, it's poetic. It really is wonderful. And we're so happy to have Patti Smith with us during the course of this hour. We'll be welcoming phone calls for her at 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Hello, Patti.
Hello, it's nice to talk to you.
Oh, it's great to talk to you. I really loved your book. I didn't know what to expect, and I, to tell you the truth, I know everybody in the world knows a whole lot about you, and I knew more about your writing and your influence in the world of rock and roll, but I didn't know what a writer you are. You are just fabulous.
Oh, thank you so much. Well, I've been writing a lot longer than I've been performing, so I guess I've had a lot more... I put a lot more time and discipline in it, but that's pretty much how I consider myself as a writer, so I'm glad to hear that.
Well, you're hearing that from a lot of people. I know it's a beautifully written memoir. The thing that really, and I don't know how you accomplished this, if it was through journals that you kept, or it's your dreams, or just that you remember that period in your life so well, but you really come away from this feeling as though you and Robert were together, and it was about 2 weeks ago, and you've held on to that youth and that beauty as though it were yesterday. How did you do that?
Well, it was a very happy period in my life, a struggling period, but I kept daily diaries. I had little teenage-style diaries where I wrote something every day, you know, that I cut Robert's hair like a rockabilly star, or we went to Coney Island. So the day I met Janis Joplin, all of these things are notated in small diaries, and also, as a young writer, I kept extensive journals. I had a lot of letters from Robert, photographs. But I also have such great memories of that time and very clear memories. And I didn't write about anything in the book unless I had documentation and I could see it happening in front of me like a movie. Mm. If it was a murky area or something I felt unqualified to talk about, I wrote what I knew. Mm-hmm. So, and I wrote what I could back up with some documentation.
Yeah, well, you brought it all alive, that's for sure. I want to talk a little bit about your early years. The book is beautiful, and you're a poet as well. I think about those times of those people in our lives where, and it was true certainly for Robert Mapplethorpe, the people you run into who you just click with, or the early influences we have. And I love the stories of you sitting next to your mother, and she's smoking a lot of cigarettes and reading books, and books become very attractive to you and subsequently incredibly important in your life.
Yes, I mean, all through my life, even when I was a toddler, I wanted to read. I petitioned my mother to teach me, and I was reading well before I went to school. I wasn't the greatest student in school, but I certainly was a voracious reader. And I also just love books physically. I love to hold them, the paper, the font, the design of the book. So in working with this book, I was involved in every aspect of it.
Oh, were you? Oh, that's nice.
Oh, yes,
to know.
The design. Every page, in fact, how the type fell on every page. I'm very, very interested in book design. So I worked with a really great girl. We worked on how everything would look. Because the book is a very important thing. To me, it's, you know, especially in this age of information, you can get just pure information over the internet very quickly. So a book has to be even more special.
So I was reading that, and that obviously influenced my reading too, that it's, I thought it was a thing of beauty, and it's partially, well, it's because of what you wrote, but you also made sure that I was looking at a thing of beauty.
Yes, that everything, the cover, the inner cover, the end papers, the font, how the pictures were laid out, all of these things are very important to me.
Yeah. Well, you get pregnant at a very young age, and you are an unlikely person, I think, for all that's happened to you in your life in some ways.
Well, it was the times we were living in.
Right,
but, you know,
I understand
there was very little education. You know, in 1967, you were really not supposed to have sex before you got married. That's
right.
How I was raised. I, had a very uneducated teenage encounter, because it wasn't, you know, an affair or anything. It was just teenage experiment. And in those days, you know, we just weren't well educated. And I, coming from a poor family, not really having a father for the child because the boy was much too young, I just did what I thought best for the child, and that was to provide a well-rounded home. And that's, I did the best I could, and then went off. I was only 20 by then, so,
so young.
I just went off and had my life.
Right, and what a life. Well, you've had such an amazing life, haven't you? But that has stayed with you in some ways, because I know there are parts of the book where you're kind of weepy or you're feeling sad, and there's all these momentous things that have happened to you before you're 20 years old, moving to New York, living in Central Park or wherever you can find a little space of grass or whatever to live on. But so much has happened that you haven't had a chance
to process.
Yeah, but maybe because you're young and because so much is happening.
Well, I was very lucky to meet Robert, because Robert was a good listener. He was very caring. In my life, I've had, you know, interesting relationships. I had a beautiful husband. But I have to say that in terms of, like, kindness and caring, there was hardly a better person than Robert.
And tell us the story, because I love to hear, and you tell it so well, of how you met him.
Well, the first time I met him, I was looking, I was actually looking for a place to stay. I was looking for friends of mine who went to Pratt Institute, but when I went to the address that I had, they had moved, and the fellow that lived there now suggested that the boy, his roommate in the back room, a back room, might know, and I went to find him, and he was sleeping, And I looked down at him, and he was lying there, you know, with masses of curly hair, and he saw me. He must have heard me because he opened his eyes and looked at me and smiled. So my first memory of Robert is that a sleeping boy who opened his eyes and smiled at me.
And your last memory of him as well, isn't it?
Yes.
The times that you had together, to be able to have a friend and a lover who's that closely connected to you must have been quite an extraordinary thing. I mean, that you can write about it as though it were yesterday. He was just, the two of you are really good for each other.
Well, I mean, I still, the things that Robert did for me, I mean, obviously, you know, learning at a young age that your boyfriend who, you know, you seem to have, you know, a traditional relationship was struggling with his sexual identity was very, very difficult. But the things that Robert and I shared were far more enduring than a sexual relationship. He helped instill confidence in me as an artist. He taught me everything that he knew. He was very gifted. I was very curious and very hardworking, but not as not as facile as he was. And he taught me quite a bit. But it was a mutual trust. And it lasted our whole life. You know, it transcended all the different things that happen with people in life. And I still have it. The gifts that Robert gave me, one, the most important being confidence in myself as an artist, never went away. So I'm able to talk about him in present tense because he's still with me.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. Who thought you were going to become famous? Did he think that, or you thought that, or you both thought that?
Well, I was a gutsy kind of kid, and I knew that I would survive, and I was hoping I would do something great. But Robert really, he actually had no doubt that our work was worthy and that we would make our mark. I mean, for me, I just still felt like a young colt. I wasn't that concerned when that would happen. But Robert really pushed for things to happen quicker. I always look at this time in my life, I think, yes, he had to do that because in the end he had a very short lifeline. So I suppose it was good that he was ambitious when he was young.
Patti Smith is our guest this hour. She has a really gripping and beautifully written memoir, Just Kids, about her years with Robert Mapplethorpe. Patti Smith, our guest this hour. Her book is Just Kids. And we're welcoming phone calls, too. I don't mean to neglect you. If you'd like to join this conversation, here's how you do so. It's 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655 for you to join the conversation. I grew up about the same time you did in lived on nothing for a long time as well, Patti. And I was thinking that I wanted for you to describe more what it was like, and you had absolutely nothing. You didn't have money to buy chocolate milk. You were living outside in Central Park, et cetera. I want you to describe that a little bit. And I think that it would be very, very hard for people to be able to have that kind of freedom, ability to experiment, to just sort of give up everything and live as you did from hand to mouth. Well, can you talk about that? And do you think it would be really hard to do that now?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I didn't really give up anything because I came from a poor family.
You didn't have anything.
I was the oldest of four children, and they needed me to go because, you know, they had a lot of responsibility. I was used to struggle. My parents struggled. My mother was a waitress. I was a sickly kid. I was no stranger to struggle. I was happy. When I went to New York City, I was happy to struggle in New York City because I was free. I mean, coming from rural South Jersey, where, you know, there was no real arts community, where somebody who dressed like me was considered such an oddball. I was so happy being, you know, sleeping in Central Park or, you know, roaming, you know, the city streets, and it wasn't dangerous. No one bothered me. And, you know, in those days we had no credit cards. Nothing like that. If you didn't get a job, if you didn't make money, you didn't eat. You had nothing. So essentially, I was very ready to start from scratch because that's what everybody did. I wasn't extraordinary. I mean, I think anyone who left home, who came from a lower middle class family, would have the same struggle ahead of them, and. I was happy to struggle in the name of art. That was a very honorable struggle. I just I didn't like being hungry, physically hungry.
Right.
That was my biggest problem. But I worked very hard to find a job. But I think it's essentially that, you know. One is the romantic joy of being free, and the other was having no alternative. I mean, now people have. With credit cards, they can obtain things that they haven't earned, and in some ways it can jumpstart people and it can be a good thing. In other ways, it's not good because one gets used to the fact of getting something for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that you know, a work ethic is very, very important to have, and it's very important to understand the value of a dollar.
Let's go to some phone calls for you, Patty. John from Appleton is our first caller. Hi, John.
Hi, John.
Hi. Good morning, Patty.
Good morning.
My wife and I just finished reading the book, and in fact, I just put it in the mail today to Antonia Stample, who's now an assisted living in Florida, Peter Stample's former common law wife. So one of the things that struck me out of the book is how incredibly interwoven the world of music and art was in the city at that time, and we were kind of hanging out with Holy Modal Rounders and that extended gang, but we never went in the city. We lived in New Jersey without the expectation of seeing a lot of folks we knew. And you really just captured that interwovenness very well. But the other thing that just really moved us a lot, and I think it was a huge challenge, that you needed to write about yourself to tell the story, but I had the sense you worked very hard at pushing yourself into the background to keep the focus on this lovely love poem to Robert.
Well,
and I
think
just thank you for that gift.
That was a difficult thing. It's very hard to write about oneself. You start feeling so conceited and self-involved. And also, you know, I have evolved since that time period, so I was trying very hard to stand back and be accurate, but you know, the story isn't, I didn't want to focus on myself. It's about Robert and I being young in this atmosphere, this incredible atmosphere that we were brought up in. And of course, you know, music, rock and roll was our cultural voice. It wasn't so much looked at as a business or a way to get rich and famous. In the original, you know, throws, and especially in the late 60s, we had our rock stars and everything, but still it was a real touchstone for, you know, political and revolutionary and sexual energy. And so I think it was interwoven into everything.
He went through, as you write about, some times that some of us reading would say, wow, this is pretty wild. But you write about it, and it's kind of a matter-of-fact way. But I want for you to talk a little bit about his conflicted behavior and how it would manifest itself. There were times when I'm sure it was not easy to be with him because he was very withdrawn. He wouldn't talk to you for a long period of time. He was wearing costumes that seemed maybe a little bit outrageous. Was it related to his sexuality?
Well, he wasn't. His so-called costumes, you know, his really developed after, you know, he was very more open about his sexuality. Uh-huh. When we were young, we both, you know, wearing certain kinds of outfits is part of being young. I mean, I dress like a gypsy, and I dress like, you know, Audrey Hepburn and Funny Face, and, you know, a French... you know, a French beatnik. You know, I had my looks, too. And it's part of the fun and part of the pleasure of being young. You know, I wouldn't trade that for anything. But Robert, his silence was difficult because I couldn't figure out how to help him or what was wrong. But Robert was not a difficult person to live with at all. He was, I can't emphasize in what how caring he was as a human being. Mm-hmm. I mean, the difficult periods that we have in the span of a lifetime were relatively short. And Robert was very, very generous in helping me get through the transition he had to make when he just, you know, his homosexual nature became too strong for him to deny or suppress, even for my sake. And he helped me go through all of the steps because we had something worth saving, and neither one of us wanted to give that up.
But you helped him through all the steps as well. You're a very accepting person.
We helped each other.
Right. I love the little bits of humor in the book, too. When you were talking about your costumes, I think about the line when you were at this... la-di-da event for people who are interested in art, and you didn't like those kinds of things, and you were dressed. I want you to describe the costume, which you
said was... I can't remember which one that was.
You described it as being a tennis player in mourning.
Oh, well, that wasn't such a bad look.
right.
I was dressed in all black, like pegged black satin pants and a black shirt and a black jacket. But I wore pristine white sneakers because it was supposed to be a costume ball. And a fairly big designer admonished me for my white sneakers with all of this black as a fashion faux pas. And I told him, no, it was perfectly in keeping with my look. And he said, well, what is your look? And I said, I'm a tennis player in mourning. So he liked that so much that he gave me, you know, fashion laurels. So, you know, that was the last time that someone in fashion shook their finger at me.
Let's go to McCall's. Steve is next from Madison. Hi, Steve.
What an amazing privilege.
Hi, Steve.
And it's slightly off topic, but I would like to hear one more album from you yet.
I'm working on one right now.
All right.
The book... the book has been so well received that it's sort of I've had to take a little sidestep and just process that, and I'm just so happy. But I'm working with my core band, working with, of course, Lenny Kaye and J.D. Doherty and Tony Shanahan, but also Tom Verlaine, my son and my daughter, with Flea and a few other of my friends. So I think it's going to be a very strong album.
Steve, do you have another question, follow-up?
Still there?
Yes, we're here.
Yeah, and the album after that, still, you get many ideas from outside, but I would really enjoy hearing an album of children's songs.
Oh. Well, I do write children's songs. I write a lot of them, and I would like to do something like that with my daughter. My daughter is a very sensitive composer and pianist, and do something like that with a few friends. I have a lot of plans, but right now I'm working. I have a million plans. You know, I'm trying to take good care of my health so I can do all the things I'm dreaming of.
And let's go to that moment, which is in the book, because it just all happened overnight for you, where you have the mixture of your marvelous poetry and rock, and it happens... and people notice you, and all of a sudden, something you never thought would happen because you didn't think of yourself in the music world, and there you are.
Well, I mean, the first indication was in 1971 when I did a a poetry reading with Lenny Kaye backing me on electric guitar. I was really very focused on trying to do something special with poetry, to put more energy into performing poetry. But so many people, you know, rock and roll critics and performers and people that had, you know, independent labels were at this reading and offered me, you know, so many interesting opportunities. But again, I had no concept of myself as a musician or someone who would be performing in the arena of rock and roll. So I had to step back a little and assess my abilities and think, you know, about what I was doing. So it took me a while, but not because people didn't offer, but because I had to, you know, decide what I could contribute.
And the people who were influencing you then and influencing you now, you spend a lot of time talking about Rimbaud and going to the museum in France, Bob Dylan, Sam Shepard, who was a very close friend for a long period of time. Can you talk just briefly about some of those people and what part of them?
Well, I mean, Bob Dylan was a big influence on me since I was a teenager. Of course, just like anyone else, I was a fan. So I learned a lot vicariously from Bob Dylan, being politically aware, merging poetry with music, the way he dressed, the way he walked. Bob Dylan was a very big influence. But people like Sam Shepard and William Burroughs and a lot of the people that I met were more than an influence. They became, you know, they were friends and mentors.
Yes.
And I'm still friends with Sam Shepard. We did a reading together just about a month ago. I'm very close with Sam, and Sam was very instrumental in pushing me more toward music, and I wrote some of my first songs, actually, for a Sam Shepard play, so called Mad Dog Blues. Hmm. So Sam was you know, a loved one, a friend, a co-worker. We wrote a play together, and we're still, like I said, very close.
I'm glad to hear that. That's good.
Me too.
Yeah. What about this moving in these worlds? There are parts of the book Robert needs, this thing about needing a patron and not wanting to move in that world. You didn't feel very, very comfortable in some of these, you know, la-di-da lunches or dinners with people who had a whole lot of money, and I kind of admire you for that. Solid. You
know, no, it's just that I'm not so great socially. I'm still not so great socially, but also the work that Robert, you know, it's traditional. I mean, look at Leonardo da Vinci or Michelangelo. Mm-hmm. You know, they had to court. They had to deal with, you know, dukes and duchesses and popes and kings.
Right.
That's how they got their work done. And, you know, artists and filmmakers and people, you know, for the kind of work that Robert needed, he needed patronage. And that to me was normal in terms of art history. You know, Van Gogh had his brother as a patron. I mean, artists traditionally have seek patronage, and but you know, my concept of myself really was as a writer, and a writer doesn't need anything but, you know, paper, pencil, a typewriter, and their imagination. You know, a writer, you know, it's sort of like one of the least expensive of all arts, and I just you know, I sort of got along the way that I did, but I had no judgment about, you know, that process. I'm just not good socially, and I'm, you know, I have really bad table manners, and I still do, you know. It's just, you know, I would sit in some dinner party with four or five spoons and forks, and I would have, you know, I just have to wait till somebody else started eating to see
what to use,
you know, which spoon to pick up, but It's not because I was judgmental, although, you know, I was sort of a Holden Caulfield type of kid. It just wasn't my scene.
Right. Patti Smith is our guest, and we'll welcome more phone calls if you would like to join the conversation. Her memoir, Just Kids, about her years with Robert Mapplethorpe, has just been published in a fine read it is. Our phone number is 800-486-8655 if you'd like to join this conversation. Patti Smith, our guest. Her book is Just Kids. I want to remind you that we are in our winter pledge drive, and in order to have these kinds of conversations, which literally don't happen anywhere else, I ask that you give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. One of the nicest things I think has happened during this pledge drive is this Food for 40 and listening to Patti talk about going hungry, which was a big part of her life during those years in New York. They just didn't have any money, and she didn't like to be hungry. When we have, when you pledge $120 or more, you can choose this Food for 40 as your thank you gift, which I think is really, somebody had a splendid idea for this one. It will provide 40 meals to those who are facing hunger in your area. Go to WPR.org for your pledge or call 888-202-2552. Patti Smith, our guest, and we take more phone calls. Let's go to Jane from La Crosse. Hi, Jane.
Hey, good morning.
Hi, Jane.
Hi, Patti.
Hi.
Wonderful to see you on WPR. It's great. I have a question, and then I'll just let you answer it if you can. It might be strange. I have a sister who's very talented, has been writing on scrap pieces of paper all her life, and she also is very musically inclined, plays guitar. She's 49 now, 48. And honestly, she's hitting a stride now. And I don't feel like I'm that supportive because, as you know, it's really difficult, as you know, to be in that field of business. And how can I be supportive, number one, or number two, should I be cautious and careful that maybe she has visions of grandeur, and is that ridiculous?
Well, I think, well, first of all, just loving your sister and believing in what she does is that's, you know, that's that was always good enough for me in terms of my siblings. But I think that, you know, people should strive to do the best they can at anything. I mean, I'm 63 years old and I'm still learning, hitting my stride, feeling that I'm figuring things out. And but one has to, you know, in order to, you know, bring their work out into the world, it's a lot of work. One has to be willing to, you know, sacrifice, go through a lot of, you know, criticism, scrutiny, and failure sometimes. But one has to love their work. You know, when people ask me how they can become successful, I say the first thing is, how can you become good? You know, the first question is, what do I want? What do I have that I can give to the people that will magnify them or serve them? And because if you want something out of the people, you have to give them something. So, you know, I don't have any practical answers. The music business is in a very transitional state. Just do one's work. You know, that's, you know, there's it's a different world. You know, people can, you know, share their work with each other on, you know, on MySpace and things like that. And you know, it's being reinvented even as we speak. But I think that, you know, if somebody believes in themselves and what they're doing, just keep working.
Yeah. Oh, I like that answer. Let's talk about God for a few minutes and Robert's Catholicism and what he thought of God and how Catholicism influenced and, I don't know, maybe tortured, maybe that's too strong a word, but this dichotomy, good and evil, how it influenced his work. And I'm also wondering about God in your life.
Well, that's a pretty broad subject, but in terms of Robert's Catholicism, I think that it had its positive aspects because a lot of the way that he arranged and put his work together was very Catholic. It had a sense of order, a sense of almost in his early constructions as if he was creating altars. I think that the you know, the Catholic Church has shepherded a lot of great art for whatever good and bad, you know. The Catholic Church has been guilty of historically, they have shepherded some of our greatest artists. So Michelangelo, who Robert, you know, loved so much, was shepherded by the Catholic Church. But in terms of his own ideology, I think that the, you know, the strong, you know, the strong pull between good and evil and the image of God and Satan, which is very Catholic, had its effect on Robert. For me, you know, I've always, you know, prayer has been my initial conduit to God, you know, since I was a child. And my idea of God changes as I evolve, but the idea that one can speak to some higher order or some energy through prayer has never left me.
I was interested because I always had the same reaction to that prayer and the ending of "I should die before I wake." I pray that
it was
Lord,
very
my soul
scary.
Wasn't that a scary one?
I've talked to a lot of people who said it was scary. It
yeah.
seems like. I never realized what a universal fear that was.
Right, well, yeah, I'm glad you wrote about it. Let's take another call. Somebody who says she'll donate to us if she gets to talk to you. So I guess that's a fair deal.
Well,
right?
Very important to donate to
yes.
public radio. You know, the difference between talking to someone in public radio is you have real human contact and real conversations other than a couple of minute sound bites. And this is only possible because it is public radio, and the public has to do their part in keeping this alive.
Right. Thank you, Patty. Let's go to Sally. Hi, Sally.
Hi, Sally.
Hey, Patty. Hey, Kathleen. This is so cool. You tell them that you're going to donate to public radio, and they put you to the front of the line, and I can talk to Patty Smith. I can't believe it.
No, you were
Patty.
In the front of the line, but you you waited.
Yeah, Patty, I want to thank you so much for your album Horses.
Thank
Every
you.
Time that comes
you're
on,
welcome.
It doesn't matter what. It doesn't matter what. This fat old Minnesota girl gets up off her fat butt and she dances like a whirling dervish every time I hear a cut from Horses. It's I always say I dance like Patti Smith. In my day I used to clear floors. I used to clear dance floors.
Me too.
So much fun.
Well, we can still do it, you know. Just, you know, you can do like me. I've cut out all butter, all fried foods. I walk a lot and, you know, think positive and, you know, we want to live a long time. Life is great and do everything you can to feel healthy and dancing certainly is good for the soul. I still believe that.
And I love your stories about dancing. Thanks, Sally, very much for your call. It's great to hear from you again because you started dancing. You could really... dance when you were a kid, right? You and your brothers and sisters.
Oh, we
used
were
to
really
dance. You
good
were
dancers.
Good.
Well, we're still. I mean, we're from South Jersey, the South Jersey, Philadelphia area. The people, you know, they're really good dancers, and I still am very happy with my dance abilities.
Good for you. Just be careful when you dance. I know you were hurt at one point for dancing off the stage.
I was hurt actually, not by dancing. I was just my. It was a poor setup.
Oh.
You know, it was my monitors were put on the lip of the stage.
Ooh.
And when I put my foot on my monitor, it went over, and it was about a 14-foot drop.
Oh.
But that was not because of anything I was doing. It was because of just poor treatment of a opening band.
Yeah. Mm. Well, Patty, thank you for writing the book and for speaking with us. I just I can't tell you enough what a beautiful writer you are. It's
oh, well, thank you.
Moving.
And just everyone out there, please, you know, donate whatever you can to your public radio. You would really miss it if it was gone.
How true. We would miss it if it were gone. Yes. Thank you, Patty. Patty
You're
Smith.
Welcome.
The book is Just Kids, and it concentrates on her years with Robert Mapplethorpe in New York. It is very, very beautiful. And, you know, follow her advice. We'd miss it if it were gone. It's true. If you can imagine not having public radio to listen to, it would be a terrible thing. So you have been enjoying this conversation and all the conversations that we have here on Wisconsin Public Radio, and we ask you please to take a few minutes to make this hour and many more hours to come possible. Put a value on this programming that you enjoy every day. Jim Wallace and Patty Smith, not a bad morning, huh? Not a bad morning. WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Lisa Nalbandian is joining me again in our Milwaukee studios. Hello, Lisa.
Hello, Kathleen. What a great hour.
And wasn't that fun?
Oh, and all I can say is, hey, Patty Smith asked you to pledge, so you should just do what Patty Smith says.
Right.
I think we can end it there. So do what Patty Smith says and go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Help us pay for the programs that you depend on, like this one, and help us meet this goal. We have to reach 75 pledges by 11 o'clock. And I'm just going to say it. We have a ways to go.
Yes,
we need 63 more pledges. WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And keep in mind, when you pledge $120 or more, you can choose food for 40 as your thank you gift. And this thank you gift will provide 40 meals to those facing hunger in your area. For more information about Food for 40 and to make your pledge, WPR.org. 888-202-2552.
I don't know who thought about that, but that's a great idea, and it really ties into what she writes a lot about in the book. It's when you don't have food, it's amazing how food can consume you, and she and Robert just didn't have money for food. They went without food, and people would save little things of soup for them in the bookstore where she worked, and they were really starving artists in many ways. And people don't have food for a lot of reasons. So I like this. I think it's really a good thing. If you ask for food for 40 and you can pledge $120, you'll be doing, as she said, do good in your music. You'll be doing good. Yeah, that's what our hours have been about, doing good. It's been two do-good hours. I like that. So pledge, all right? WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You talked a little bit about the hours this week have been really about doing good. And I think that's why listeners like you decide to become contributors, because they want to do good. They want to make a difference. And giving to Wisconsin Public Radio is one way to make a difference, one way to do good things. And can help your local community, especially if you take advantage of the Food for 40. So your new membership today not only will pay for the programs you listen to, it also gives other people in your neighborhood a chance to discover Wisconsin Public Radio, too. So make that difference. Give at WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
And if you can, some of you may be able to consider making a leadership gift. Your leadership gift of $1,000 could help pay for others who can't afford to contribute right now for a whole host of reasons. $1,000 contribution works out to be about $83 a month, and it's easy to set up whether you give online or on the phone. Any gift makes you a member of Wisconsin Public Radio, and all amounts, believe me, are deeply appreciated. WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And this is my last hour of this drive to ask for your support. So if you love the work that Rhonda Fanning is doing and Chrissy Pease and John Treader, please call in and say that you do, because we do some, I think, really important conversations.
You know, a gift to Wisconsin Public Radio is a gift through Wisconsin Public Radio to the community. You enjoy this radio service, and so do many others who can't afford to pay for it or support it. So make your pledge right now for yourself and for your community. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
When you pledge $120 or more, you can choose the Food for 40 as your thank you gift. It will provide 40 meals to those who are facing hunger in your area. Just a few more moments to pledge here during this hour. It's WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You know, pass the hat, pay the cover, buy a ticket, you know, pretend you're going to a Patti Smith concert. There's so many ways to say it. And the request is the same. Pay for what you use. Do that right now for Wisconsin Public Radio. Go to WPR.org. It's easy. 888-202-2552, and that's easy too.
Yeah, after listening to that hour, I'd like to go to a Patti Smith concert myself, but definitely this book is worth a read. It really captures this wonderful moment in her life. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning and to Chrissy Pease for producing this hour. Thanks, Lisa Nalbandi and John Treader. Thank you so much as well. And for all of your pledges, keep them coming in, would you please, during these remaining few minutes. It's 888-202-2552, 888-202-2552, or WPR.org. Thank you, everyone.
Love is the rain.